Welcome to episode 2 of the podcast series Alternate Realities, a podcast series which is all about mind, body and spirit. And today I'm very excited to be introducing holistic medium Shane Gadd onto today's show. Shane is somebody who is one of the most wonderful people I've met who works with spirit. So although we are about mind, body and spirit, there's going to be a lot of emphasis today with having a medium on the show with regards to spirit and joining the two worlds, the one that we can see and the one that some of us can also see. So I hope you're going to enjoy In Conversation with Shane Gadd today. Welcome, Shane. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. I really am.
Oh, it's lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me along. It's a real honour and a heartfelt pleasure, Jay. Thank you.
Well, we're going to go into a little bit later about how I met you, but to start with, I'd like to give the listener a little bit of a background. You've been a psychic medium now for over 25 years, and I'd like to sort of just start with where you were born and kind of what was the first catalyst in you and sort of feeling psychic experiences.
Beautiful question. It's a question that I love answering. It's one I get asked so often. I think people are always intrigued to how it began, where it started, where did it come from, you know? And quite often it's because, you know, once I share it, you know, people kind of in a way relate to it at some level, because I think that quite often people have experiences, but quite often we dismiss them as something that's just happened or they're unsure about the experience. But for me, I couldn't be unsure about that experience. It was just cast iron. So it happened when I was, and I think the age is quite interesting as well, and I'll share why as we go forwards, but happened when I was 7 years old. So picture this if you can. I wake up what felt to be in the middle of the night, but I wouldn't know, but I just know it felt like to be in the middle of the night. I was 7 years old, and they're standing there, as clear as can be, was a lady standing at the end of the bed. And I remember, even still to this day, feeling really petrified by that experience. Yet there was nothing to be scared of. But of course, being a child and you wake up there at the end of the bed, there's a lady standing there. And I remember, you know, thinking for years and years and years, why did not mum and dad come to check on me? Because, you know, I felt I was screaming out for my mum and dad to come and check on me. And they didn't. And what I've come to realize in the last few years that I think what happened was I was that kind of, you know, frozen to the spot like rabbit in headlights, that I thought I called out, but actually I hadn't, because mum and dad never checked on me. Now, what was kind of really strange in all of this is the next day, however, I have no recollection of this, but my dad shared the story with me several times, is that I described this lady in so much detail, he knew exactly who it was.
And who was it?
Yeah, now this is this is so it's quite amazing and funny at the same time, is that it turned out to be my dad's mother-in-law, so my gran, and he was really shocked because he's replied to me all these years later, quite often when he shares the story, he was like, you know, I sat there and thought, oh my gosh, what is she doing haunting the house? He never got on with her.
He just it's a typical mother-in-law then.
Absolutely. It's like, oh my gosh, what's mother-in-law doing haunting the house? But it grabbed hold of him. And I think it was an important point because, you know, he said back then, you know, he had the belief that when you died, you were dead and that was the end of it. You know, there was nothing else. And I think that, you know, I know in my heart, reflecting on all that, is that was absolutely by design. You know, it had to come in with that sort of strength Had to absolutely grab hold of my dad in the same way to get him, if you like, on side. And he did. He nurtured it. You know, he nurtured that in me. And thereafter, there were many visitations. But, you know, it's one that I haven't ever forgotten. It's one that really kind of grabbed hold of us all. And life wasn't the same thereafter.
So what would you say then, Shane, you know, when you say that it was sort of the dreaded mother-in-law and, you know, as far as he was concerned, you know, the first thing that came to mind was a haunting rather than spirit. What can you say, or do you have an awareness of what actually made him nurture that? Was it fear or was it something else?
Really beautiful. I you know, the thing is, she died when I was only 2 years old. So I don't have any recollection of her as a person. I have no recollection of her as a person. Yet I've come to know her. You know, I truly believe that it is her that was one of the catalyst, but it is her that has often nudged me, guided me, and taught me, you know, to do what I'm doing today, without a shadow of a doubt. And I think that, you know, it would have shocked, you know, I know that, you know, with my little one, if he kind of shared that with me, I probably wouldn't be surprised now. But I think going back to where my dad was, I think he was really, really surprised. And I think it was a mixture of disbelief, shock, but also because of the description was there, you know, I described her in so much kind of detail. Which means that, you know, and I need to have a conversation with him about that, really. It means that he would have asked me questions to be able to kind of, in a way, piece together that description.
And to validate it.
Yeah, completely. He just knew. He knew it was. You know, it was there. And I guess the other thing is that I probably was quite shook up still. And, you know, I believe that, you know, spirit never intend to scare us, but I think that it was about just coming in with a real sense of strength and force to ignite the ripple effect that was needed, you know, because otherwise he could have, you know, just shut that down, you know, and that's why, you know, I often say to parents now is, you know, if they come to you with those sort of experiences, just kind of listen and gently support that as much as you can, because, you know, there's something happening that you know is quite important to look at in a way.
It is actually, and for me, you know, I was a child that used to come out with things, and people used to look at me like I was absolutely mad. You know, and I used to kind of, to me, I'd look at things and think, well, this is pretty obvious. Why doesn't everybody else know this? And, you know, that was very much shut down in a different way, which we'll come to a bit later on in terms of why. But it is really important, isn't it, that is nurtured.
Well, you know, completely. It's like, how often do you know you've heard of, you know, children saying, you know, or parents actually, more so, parents saying quite often, oh yeah, you know, little one's got an imaginary friend, you know, and my question has always been, you know, is it really imaginary?
Absolutely.
You know, and my dad said, you know, you had many imaginary friends and then just smiled and laughed, you know, and yeah, you know, there's something in that. You know, why is it that children have an imaginary friend, and is it imaginary?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a big question in a lot of cases. So what can you tell me what happened when you were, I think you were about 21 at the time, you're sort of in your next kind of like, you know, sort of catapult on the journey.
Absolutely. It was a huge, you know, huge catalyst. I think, you know, from 7 years old and dad said to me, you know, it was different times that different people would turn up, and he would take, you know, ask those questions, kind of build that picture, take it off to his mum and dad. And quite often those people will become validated. And then, you know, kind of, you know, life comes along, and I guess in a way I just kind of moved with that and through that. And I do remember schooling feeling a bit strange and odd as well. But kind of move forwards in time to, I was around 21, And I'd been working away from home at the time for a while. And I come back and I remember this evening again. It was a really kind of poignant marker in my journey, is that I got home, got off the train, and I just felt compelled to take the long route back up to Dad's. And it was kind of an autumn wintry night, and it was kind of dark, and I just felt compelled to take this journey, which led me past the local spiritualist church. Now, the odd thing about this was that building was like a magnet to me in my school years. You know, I used to kind of walk that way back, which again was the long way back, just to pass this building, not really understanding what it was or what it was about. And I remember going over and seeing this little notice board in the window outside and thinking, I still don't understand what this is, but I felt like drawn to it. And this particular night, you know, all these years later, this particular night, I'm walking up, and as I approach it, and I've been away from the town for a long time, as I approach it, I look up and there's a light on, and I was like, okay. You know, drawn to that light, I'm literally drawn to that light. And as I approach it, there's a door open, and without thinking about it, I've gone in through the door. I've just literally gone in through the door, kind of come through the other door, and there's a medium working. Well, of course, at the time, I never really knew or understood, definitely not what a medium was, let alone the word. This gentleman was talking to the audience. That's all I saw. I was trying to make sense of it all very, very quickly. And he points and says, right, I'm coming to you. And I kind of look over my shoulder thinking he's talking to someone else. And he said, no, you who's just come through the door. And as I look up, I kind of scan the audience very quickly. And I look in the front row, they're sitting there, was my dad and my uncle.
Wow.
Who are still here, of course. I just, you know, again, you know, it's like, what the hell's going on? And the medium then turns to me and says, you know, he says, do you remember who visited you when you were 7 years old? And by this point in time, my dad's looked round because he's heard my voice as I start to reply. And he's just like in disbelief as I am. And he's nodding to me because, of course, he remembers the whole situation. And it took me a moment to take in what was happening. And I said, yeah, apparently so. And then the memory started to come back. You know, that just put me squarely, deeply on that path, and also, of course, opened up a huge amount of other questions to the fact why my dad was sitting in the audience and why my uncle was there, and why is it by chance the three of us all ended up there on the same evening?
Yeah, well, as we know, there aren't such things as coincidences, but there is synchronicity. So it was one of those moments, wasn't it?
You know, I quite often say, you know, it's never by chance. It's always by design. And for me, that experience hugely was by design. And it put the three of us very deeply onto a path and onto a journey that actually become life changing. It become life changing for all of us, you know, hugely. One, I'm truly thankful. You don't forget those things. You really don't.
What sort of drew you towards being that medium professionally, and how did that come about? Because I know you suffered quite greatly with a condition, and you still do, don't you?
I do. It's like, you know, when I kind of look back, you can see that everything was really joined up. So it's like the seed was planted when I was seven. Okay, and if we think about, which is why I said about, you know, ages being important, you got 7, 14, 21, you know, the next major event was when I was kind of 21. You know, I think there's something about all of that. You know, there
Well, it's a sorry to interrupt you, Shane, but it is the cycle of Saturn, isn't it? Saturn's roughly a 7-year cycle. So
there you go. You know, you've got those cycles that run through all things, you know, and we're not separate from that, I guess, you know. But it was when I look back, you can really see how all of that was kind of joined up. And, you know, even down to the fact that my dad was there and my uncle was there, was they were both having experiences as well.
Yeah.
My uncle especially. I mean, at the time, my uncle was looking into energy healing. His daughter at the time, bless her heart, was suffering with leukemia. He, whenever he kind of walked towards her, his hands would burn. You know, there's lots of questions stirring.
Yeah.
That threw us all three of us together. So, yeah, moving forward through time, I had spent a very short but very fundamental, had a deep impact on me, time in the Territorial Army, Princess of Wales, Royal Hampshire's, nicknamed the Tigers. And their ethos was fierce pride, and they were, you know, it was all infantry, and we were running up hills and carrying our weight and beyond. And it was incredible. And for me, it was exactly where where I wanted to be. It was that sense of working as a team, and I thrived on challenge and physical challenge. And I know you and I had a conversation about this a little while ago. One of the things I forgot to share with you, which I think is really, really important, was one particular evening we were under a basher, which is like a tarp. It was torrential. It had been a lightning storm. And we were on stag, which was kind of watching over everyone, whilst everyone else has a short sleep. And we were on stag, and we're kind of laying under this basher and just keeping an eye out. And it was really, really heavy rain. And sound does strange things when you're outside, especially when you're in a lightning storm, and you're told to be very vigilant. And I remember hearing this female voice call my name. Now, what was really odd about that is it called my first name. So it called me by Shane, which actually in that environment would not happen. And I remember thinking, oh my God, you know, and we were on exercise and this was, they were blanks. In the chamber, but I remember feeling a little bit uncomfortable and just squeezing that trigger, you know, not to fire, but I braced myself, you know, what was there in the dark. And it was a female voice, and it called my name like, I think it was 2 to 3 times. I remember just thinking, where is that coming from? And then this feeling washed over me that it's time to focus on the softer side of your nature. A few weeks later, for a routine blood test, that I was referred to a civvy doctor because they had found inflammation in my blood. Within 3 weeks, I was medically discharged under the care of a civilian doctor, and I was diagnosed with a rare arthritic condition called ankylosing spondylitis. And again, when I kind of look back at that, put a stop to the path that I was walking, and I really loved that way of life. You know, I loved the challenge. I just loved what it stood for. I loved being part of that world and that community. For that to be turned completely on its head, at first I was quite... I was grief-stricken, 100%. And then I kind of was really agitated and kind of frustrated and almost like really angry at that situation and angry at something greater than me, that, you know, what was going on? You know, and that was really painful at the time. But when I look back now, I know that, you know, in a way, you know, when I was really kind of hurting with all of that, that actually, you know, kind of angry at the condition, but there was something inside of me and a feeling around me that was saying, you know, make friends with it. Because actually, in fact, as I befriended it, I also befriended myself.
And I think it's important that we look at these life events in that way, because A, you know, what you're describing with what you're saying about your emotions at that time was actually a grief process. Yeah. And, you know, the grief process goes with any kind of change. If it's a big change, we go through that process. It's often how much we fight it and how much we actually, you know, just allow ourselves to go with those emotions, which you obviously did.
I didn't feel that I did have a choice, but it felt like there wasn't a choice. You know, it was a sense of that was kind of what was required. I think, you know, even now, you know, as we sit here in current time in, 2020, October 2020, you know, there is a grieving happening for lots of people, that they're grieving a way of life that we once knew.
Absolutely. And the thing that I was going to say about your illness, you know, the B part of that is that actually, you know, you've got this message to make friends with this illness. And when I look at the way people are these days, and because of so many things that we haven't got time to go into today, but, you know, there's so much affecting people globally now that, you know, chronic conditions are becoming more and more prevalence, but also we're talking about them more, which is great. And you know, but you've got two choices. You either make friends with it as best as you can after you've gone through the grieving process, yeah, or sometimes while you're going through that,
yeah,
and then you move on to something, you know, else, whatever that something is, or you can get stuck in it, and then, you know, it's the thing that controls you in your life, isn't it? So what I'd like you to go on to next is, because I find this amazing, what you actually achieved. And so, you know, going full circle almost, you had that real physicality when you were in the Territorial Army that you loved. And then you had this debilitating condition that actually gets a lot of people kind of like really immobilized. Yeah. Tell us what happened with you and how you got active again, because I find this amazing.
So around all of that, there was another experience I had that I think anchored me. So I think my short time with the Tigers really kind of anchored me. It gave me the foundation and also an ethos and a philosophy that mirrored and anchored what was already kind of in a way inside of me. So it's like a reflection. You know, that fierce pride was something that I was, you know, that was a part of who I was. And then I kind of, and around that as well, I've been made redundant. And at the time of our diagnosis, I was, you know, coming off exercise and I started to have a little bit of a limp and a hobble. And then as I kind of warmed back up, it would go. So it wasn't as fierce as it became in my later years. It was kind of early on. And I think, you know, treatment moves forwards with time as well. And what they know now was different to what they knew like 25, 26 years ago. And one of the experiences I then went, which became an anchor to me as well, was that in my everyday job, in my everyday life, your Territorial Army is, you know, kind of your reserve, I'd been made redundant. So I've been made redundant. So another layer of change and another layer of endings and another layer of grief, yet I felt also liberated all in one go, is on the Friday being made redundant. By the Monday, I was up in the Scottish Mountains. And then I proceeded to walk across the Cairngorm Mountains, and I just felt this huge calling to go. You know, I'd never been there ever before, and I think there was a part of me that was just wanting to stop, and the only way I felt I could do that was to take myself into that big void, that into that big unknown. You know, if we look at a lot of ancient cultures, they go on walkabout, you know, or vision quest. It was a rite of passage.
Yeah.
And I met myself. That is exactly what happened. I went into those mountains as one person, and I come out of those mountains as completely another. In amongst this experience with the territorial army, in amongst all this experience of kind of walking through the spiritualist church, all of that just completely mashed up together. And it did, I was coming back out of that space with a deep sense of feeling and a deep sense of meeting myself. And some of that wasn't, you know, it wasn't pleasant, you know, it was harsh as well. And I think that, the thing I really remember from that time is that at first you're really excited, you know, you're excited to pack your backpack, get on a coach, get into the middle of nowhere. And I mean, when I say the middle of nowhere, there were days where I wouldn't see anybody. There were just days that went by.
It was actually as the shamans do it, you know, or shamans, however you want to pronounce it. But, you know, it was exactly that. It was as they go into that place of being alone, and it is a vision quest, isn't it?
Yeah. And I didn't know that. You know, it was just this, you know, really propelled feeling that, again, was like a magnet. And I think that's the thing that I listen to. And I've learned to really hear in life is that when there's that magnetizing feeling that feels as if it's pulling you from the inside, from deep down in your gut, and you're being pulled towards something, is you know, take heed, listen, you know, gently try to listen to that. And I did, and you know, as I say, you kind of, at first, you're really excited by that experience, you know, like, and you feel really liberated. And then I think it was about 10 days in, I woke up and I went, God, where the F am I? Suddenly you realize that you are literally in the middle of nowhere and literally on your own. And the excitement falls away, and almost this panic arises, you know, this kind of like, my God, you know, I think what you do is you start to think about where you actually are, and a whole range of emotions then come up. And that was, you know, that was deep healing. But the one person I met in amongst all of that was my deeper self. And there was nowhere to run. Where was I going to run? You know, I couldn't run back home. It would take me days to walk out of the mountains. You know, there was nowhere to go but inwardly.
And I think, you know, from all the experiences and people I've met over the years, that is when people don't heal, that is always the person they are avoiding, their deeper self. And that's where the wound lies, doesn't it?
Yeah, I met my mum on that mountainside, and you know, that was another strange thing at the time, is that, you know, I was having dreams of her, and she had my dear dad had gone to raise three boys on his own. My mum had left when we were all very, very young, and she had a tough time really as well. She wasn't very well, bless her, but I kind of met all of that. And in a way, you know, I think that my previous life to that, and how I was living, is like many of us, is that you're just kind of getting through the day, you're getting through the week, and one day blurs into the next, and one week blurs into the next. And you're kind of living through time rather than in time. I have a dear friend who says to me quite often, you know, it's all about, you know, are we moving in time, or are we moving through time? And I think that, like, you know, many of us, I was just literally moving through time, and Scotland become my stop, and it become this big, huge sense of facing and discovering and meeting me, and meeting all that I was. which was really, really kind of powerful. And also, I think there was a part of me that was like, you know, been diagnosed with this condition and was saying, no, stuff you. And I was sort of, you know, I was kind of okay with that. It wasn't until I come back and as a bit of time went by that the ankylosing spondylitis just beat the living daylights out of me.
And you really have had a tough time with that, haven't you, Shane?
It got to a point where, from where I was and having all that physicality and having that strength and mobility to it feels like a contradiction in a way, but it kind of grabbed hold of me and bit by bit, all my mobility was completely stripped away to the point that for a young guy in his mid to late 20s, ending up on a stick to having to walk with two sticks. And also in a way kind of not wanting to face it. That was the other thing that was going on. Even though I'd met myself, there was a part of me that was feeling that this was spiraling kind of out of control. And I at times was trying to get above it. The healing came when I completely met it more deeply. But I ended up on two walking sticks. Ended up with fusion in the neck, in the middle of the spine, ended up some years later, which is only around about 9 years ago now, being taken in and having a year apart, two hip replacements, and having learning to be able to kind of walk again. We shared some of the experience I had when I was in hospital, and again, you know, that was never by chance. You know, that was a huge milestone in itself as well, of kind of, you know, waking up in hospital and kind of lying there and thinking, you know, what now, what next? I can remember coming round and this physiotherapist was sitting there and she was sitting next to me and she just kind of took my hand really compassionately. And said to me, before we start, what is it you want from this? And I remember kind of looking at her and saying, I want to be able to walk out of here. And that is exactly what I'd done. And when it come to discharge, she kind of pulls up with a wheelchair and she looks at me with a smile and says, do you want to take the ride? Do you want to take the long walk out? And I said to her, without a doubt, let's take that long walk out. And what might take us a few minutes now took me about half an hour. That's that fierce pride and stubbornness as well, you know. But it was this determination to kind of be able to walk out the hospital. And I remember kind of standing there as I got to the exit entrance and just kind of feeling, you know, the sunlight and not seeing that for a few days and just kind of feeling it rest on my face. And I remember still so clearly of me closing my eyes and saying to myself, you know, from this day on, may I never, ever waste another single moment. I felt like I'd be given another chance, another opportunity. I was unable to walk in, but I walked out.
That is absolutely amazing. And you didn't just walk out, did you? You went on to build up a long way from just walking. So yeah. Tell me a little bit about your cycling, please.
Absolutely. I kind of, through physiotherapies, you know, one of the things they've done, I used to go to physiotherapy, I think twice a week at the time, and being sat on a static bike, and he says, you know, the best thing you can do, Shane, is jump on a bike, meaning a static bike, you know, like a gym bike. And me and all my kind of, you know, quirkiness, I thought to myself, right, okay, you know, I'm gonna go one better, and I'm gonna get a bike, you know, and I had an old one at home, and I kind of, in a way, with some help, my dear dad had, bless him, he had moved in with me during my recovery. We dragged this bike out, and he's like, Shane, are you sure about this? But he knew what I was like, you know, and he's the same. So I remember kind of just, you know, having to turn the bike, and I still do it to this day. Very rarely do I able to get my leg right over the crossbar, but I laid the bike, leaned it over to one side, kind of swung my leg over with some help. And I sat on the bike, you know, kind of shaking, actually. I remember that first time sitting there shaking. And I then kind of proceeded to go to the end of the road, which isn't far at all. And then I'd cycle back, and I'd get off that bike, go in, and I would fall asleep. I would just literally just crash out and fall asleep and woke up 12 hours later. And I proceeded to repeat that process. And what would happen was, bit by bit, I would sleep less. And at that time of recovery, I was sleeping more hours than I was awake. So I was spending more time asleep than I was awake. And that was, you know, it was a 9-month journey. But during that time of jumping on that bike every day, the consistency with recovery is key. And also, one of the things it really taught me is it brought me into the here and now. It was one day at a time. And it was learning to meet that with not perfection, because nothing about that experience was perfect, but it was about progression. And I kind of remember falling into that mindset. And I think that that's where my military training, my short time with the Tigers, really like dug in deep, because it was all about moving forwards, which is about their ethos. They were infantry, so it was all about moving forwards. And yeah, that in a way really put me in good stead for my recovery, because it was about just gathering ground. It was about every day moving forwards a little bit further, even if that was, you know, 10 more steps, or, you know, another few yards on the bike. And then what happened was that one particular day I felt, you know, so much stronger. And I got to the end of the road coming back, and I gave my dad a wave, and I turned out onto the main road. I just literally turned out onto the main road, and that become a mile. And within a week, that become 5, and then it went 10, and then it went 20 to 50, and then it was my first 100 miles, my first 100 miles. And it just completely become life-changing, you know, because I was told, you know, for a consultant, steady yourself and prepare yourself for spending the rest of your life in a wheelchair.
And I think that for a lot of people, you know, I was told many, many years ago after a car accident, which is what actually knocked me out of competitive bodybuilding, I was told, forget it, you'll never train again. I've actually got a medical report that said that the accident accelerated a debilitating back condition by 10 years. So technically right now I've got the spine of a 73-year-old, you know. You know, and I think, you know, what's really important for people listening to this is again, two things there. Things tend to have that duality, don't they?
Yes.
Is that, yeah, one, you didn't do this overnight.
No.
You know, you weren't expecting to go. I think this is the thing sometimes when we see things in the media, it's very easy to see somebody and they appear to have done things that actually are quite impossible to do, you know, because it's the way it's put together and the way the story is portrayed. But in actual fact, true healing, as you're talking about it, and the achievements, just the pure achievement of what you've managed, didn't happen at all overnight. It took a very, very long time. And it was one day at a time of getting there. That part is really important. And the other part that was really important is that whilst we have to take medical advice, because I've certainly never done anything in terms of, you know, somebody said, you know, this is not a good idea or that's not a good idea. In terms of treatments and whatever, that, for example, if you've got a raging infection, to turn around and say, well, I don't believe in antibiotics, well, you could end up dead. You know, it's not really a very good idea, is it? Yeah.
No.
But by the same token, you know, excuse me, by the same token, what can happen if we're not careful? And I know I always quote Arnie because Arnie, you know, calls them the naysayers. By the same token, you know, there are medical people only do what they kind of know, and they only say what they know. And so, you know, they're going by what most people would accept. And I think what's happening, which is what really exciting for me, what's happening now in 2020 and what's been happening now for quite a few years since I last worked in a hospital, is that people are not ignoring medical advice, but what they're saying is, hang on a minute, actually, a lot of this is dependent on my mental attitude. And if I sit down and accept that wheelchair, then that's what I'm going to spend the rest of my life in, you know. And there was a part of me that was determined that one day I would find a way, that I had enough knowledge in my head that I would find a way to be able to train, albeit not to competitive standards anymore.
It's like, you know, otherwise it defines you, you know. And I think that, you know, when I kind of look back and when I woke up that day after surgery, and that physiotherapist was sitting there, and she kind of compassionately just kind of took my hand and looked at me and kind of really kind of was present, you know. I appreciate that now more than ever, just through time and years and experience. But, you know, then for her to say, before we start, what is it that you want? Because what she was saying is, regardless of what you've been told, what is it that you want? You know, because
and therefore giving you a choice.
Totally. She was very clever. But, I, you know, conversations that me and her had, because, you know, then to kind of, you know, become discharged out of hospital, you've got to navigate the stairs, you've got to see that you can kind of get off to the bathroom okay. And the conversations we had together is that she also was a Reiki practitioner. And I just thought to myself, you know, which is energy healing, I just thought to myself, you know, none of this is a mistake.
No.
You know, none of it was a mistake. None of it, going into the Territory Army for a short amount of time, wasn't a mistake. Being thrown out of there medically wasn't a mistake either. You know, it was all a part of the same thread. But, you know, I know that now. And you know, in a way, it was almost the innate saying, listen, you know, you're in the best hands you can be in, which isn't always the case, but it was for me. And, you know, she gifted me a lot with the conversations that we had at the time.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. And that's something that, you know, I remember being a counsellor, back nearly 30 years ago now in the NHS. I worked for an NHS hospital quite locally to me, and we had the only counselling service in the whole of London because mental health just wasn't looked at back then. And the actual mind, body, spirit, which is what these conversations in alternate realities is about. It's about the fact that there is no separation, that the mind, body and the spirit are all interactive all the time. And, you know, that doesn't change. And when I started out working within that field, my remit was terminally ill patients. And now that was going to be cancer, motor neurons or AIDS. Well, AIDS patients went elsewhere. I only ever had one motor neuron. So the, you know, 99% of my patients were terminally ill with cancer. And at the time, I was, you know, following my training in terms of the counselling, but also I was getting very much into, again, I was like you, getting drawn into that spiritual side of life. And I was very into Louise Hayes, you know, you can heal your life. And the interesting thing to me was, I would have got absolutely shot down in flames back then if I'd suggested doing any kind of, you know, research on it because of the way things were back then. But quietly to myself, I would read the patient's notes, and unless they just didn't know where the primary cancer was, I'd look at where the primary cancer was, and I would gently lead them into sort of talking about things that would go with that a cancer manifesting in that area of the body. And what I found absolutely fascinating was it wasn't 70% and it wasn't 80% and it wasn't 90%. You know, when I looked at Louise Hayes, and of course since then we've had Carolyn Miss and other people that are incredible in their work, but it was 100% that what they told me absolutely match with where their cancer had manifested. And there was one particular lady that I will never forget her. I couldn't even, you know, I wouldn't be able to give her name anyway, or for obvious reasons, but I couldn't remember her name, but I remember her face. I remember exactly where she was sat and the conversation that we had. And she told me, I think one of the most, and I, you know, you and I have both been through sort of things in our life, but, you know, for all of what I've heard and seen over the years, this was the most traumatic thing that I could think that, you know, that I'd heard. And when she told me it, she looked at me and she said, "You're the only person in 40 years I've ever told that to." And I remember thinking in my head, you know, you can die peacefully now. Yeah. And, you know, as I left and ended the session, which is hard to have in a ward because you haven't got that confidentiality that you can have in a little room, you know, she said to me, "Now, you will come and see me tomorrow, won't you?" And I promised I'd come after doctor's rounds. And as I left, I thought, "But you won't be here." And, you know, she didn't die, Shane, of the cancer. She died very suddenly and very unexpectedly that night of something that was another medical condition, but it was nothing to do with the cancer.
That's incredible. So you knew, didn't you? Your heart, you knew in your heart.
Because she'd offloaded that thing that had caused so much. Right. I mean, and it was a horrendous thing. So, of course, it caused a lot of emotional pain inside of her. But, you know, these days, there's all sorts of research going on. But if I suggested doing research back then, you know, and I had a childhood of being brought up to believe I was the weird one and I was the one, you know. So the last thing I wanted was to kind of have that kind of conversation. But I've never forgotten the experiences of working with the terminally ill, and it was one of the best jobs in my entire life. It really was. And what I'd like to do now is to kind of go on to how you and I met. And before I sort of get into that, you know, I've just noticed another synchronicity in how I got drawn to you in the first place, is that you were born in Sussex, weren't you?
I was born in Sussex in a tiny, tiny, tiny little village. And I think the hospital was a wooden building, you know, people refer it to as a wooden hut. I'm sure it wasn't, but it was a wooden building in a tiny village called Cookfield. Yeah, small, tiny little place.
Well, the synchronicity that's there is, apart from the fact that I kind of, you know, you have got, I tend to kind of, you know, draw in people that have military backgrounds for obvious reasons. But just like that experience you had in Scotland. Now, this to me is fascinating. As you've been speaking, the things that have kind of come into my mind are incredible. Is that 3 years ago, I went to the Falklands, and it was the first time I'd gone initially, you know, although my husband had died out there, I'd never wanted to go. I didn't think I had a reason to go. And then suddenly I had this urge to go. So it's back to that thing we were talking about, you know, like Scotland, it was the right thing at the right time. Yeah. So, you know, when the guys were sent to war back in 1982, we laugh about it to this day because they actually, a lot of them didn't know where the Falkland Islands were. So they thought they were going to Scotland.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. And so when you actually look at the Falklands, and a lot of, you know, a lot of military training is done in the Brecon Beacons, and, you know, Scotland, places in the Brecon Beacons. You know, it is raw, isn't it? It's absolutely
wild,
raw.
And you,
absolutely. And that kind of thing, you know, where you said, well, I kind of wanted to go, but it would have taken me days to get out of it. You know, it's very much like that. You know, you can go miles without seeing a human being. Yeah. Well, the last photos that I have of my husband before he died were taken on Sussex Mountain. So there's the Sussex connection.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh.
And this is something that I'm going to share. It was something I wasn't going to actually make public until I wrote this into my book. But I actually think now is a very appropriate time because this connection is fascinating. It really is that I had this experience that, again, you know, a lot of people would say, really, you know, but just like you heard that name, what happened was when I got to the Falklands, I was doing a tab from which for those people who haven't got a military background, that's kind of like a walk, usually with
fast
a weight.
Fast walk,
yeah. But usually with a, you know, with a Bergen or whatever. But so I was doing this for charity, and I kind of had wanted to do my husband's last footsteps, but I knew that being 60 and having the medical conditions I've got, that I would not be able to do from where they landed in San Carlos all the way down to Goose Green. And obviously he got killed, you know, before getting to the actual settlement. So the decision I made was to try and do the Sussex Mountain to Goose Green, which according to our recovery driver was just over 20 miles. So when I got there, my friend Paul, who was leading the way, because obviously I didn't know where I was going, and I certainly haven't got the experience you've got, so I can't read a map. So I had somebody, you know, and we have to have a recovery vehicle, you know the score. So there I was, and he said, what would you like to do? Well, I'm not very good in the mornings, he said, you know, it means kind of traveling down tonight. And I said, no, we'll go down tonight. So he'd arranged for us to stay at Sussex Farm with some lovely people. So I'm going to mention their name. Anybody ever goes there, Tony and Richard Stevens, they're fabulous people, incredible way of life and incredible stories they've got to tell. Anyway, so they've kind of made us very welcome. We've had dinner, and eventually after we've had a very, very nice evening together, we've gone to bed. Well, of course, the last thing I can do is sleep, you know.
Yes, of course.
And I'm laying in bed in this farmhouse in the middle of nowhere, you know, with this tab to do the next day, which was really challenging, you know, because of my age and medical stuff, and you know, but more than anything, I thought, interestingly, that it was going to be in the main more challenging to me mentally.
Of course.
And, you know, I didn't know how I was going to feel. I mean, you can imagine I'm walking through the territory where my husband actually got killed. And as clear as anything, it was about 1:30 in the morning. Everybody else in the house was asleep. And as clear as anything, I heard one single gunshot.
Oh, my.
And I remember lying there thinking, I can't. That was a gunshot. And I remember thinking, and I know it was a gunshot. It was really loud and it was really clear. It couldn't have been anything else. And I'm, you know, I'm not anywhere near anything. So it sort of echoed in my head. And it, you know, of course you try and come out with logical solutions, don't you? So I'm thinking, so hang on a minute, why would there be a poacher out here in the middle of the night? You know what I mean? This is the Falklands. It's not, you know, sort of Wiltshire or somewhere.
No.
So, you know, there's nobody for miles. And then, of course, it hit me. And I thought, that is my late husband, my Gary, giving me a sign through spirit, because we all know they like playing with electricity and noise, don't we? That he is, you know, I'm not doing this just with Paul. He's with me.
Yes.
He's going to be with me tomorrow. And, you know, I swear, because I had a chest infection when I got there and I wasn't feeling great at all. And to this day, I'm sure that angel on my shoulder was the reason I did that 20 miles.
Wow. You know, those experiences, one, they impact you so deeply, you can't quite explain them, but you know in your heart what you've just experienced. You know, they're so powerful.
They sure are. And so next I want to go on to how I met you and why, you know, I'm having this chat with you today, because I think the work that you do is incredible and I think it's very important. But you and I both know there are some charlatans out there, and, you know, whether it's whatever profession it's in, you know, I think, you know, I was saying to somebody the other day about this guy, John of God, who's just been exposed and he's now in prison, you know, who had a massive following. And so I think, you know, one of the things that's really important, you know, when you're looking for anybody, you know, to go and see, whether it's a healer, whether it's a holistic therapist or somebody such as yourself, is to find somebody who has such a level of integrity. And I found you through a friend of mine who recommended you. And we've had a laugh about this, but if you put my name into Google, you know, or whatever search engine, you know, there's a lot about me out there. And so I said to her, I don't know why I want to see somebody, but I do. And she said, well, go and see this guy. He's great. And I said, okay, will you book it in your name? And she said, okay. And I said, because I want to go. And I know we're both giggling as we're saying this, because we know what happened next.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so it was booked in my friend's name. And so that you had no idea, you know, so as far as you were concerned with the booking, it was her that was turning up, not me.
I was calling you that for weeks, months, years, in fact, maybe, you know, and who I knew you as, you know.
Yeah. You did indeed. And I think when I was thinking about having this conversation today, one of the things, you know, I was thinking about was exactly that. And for me, I didn't know why I was coming to see you. It wasn't that I wanted to speak to anybody in particular, but I was just driven to do it. I knew that somebody wanted to connect with me. And although I have my own kind of psychic energy around me, you know, I don't never have worked as a medium. You know, mine comes out differently. And so you're that person. That's what a medium is, that person that makes that connection between, you know, this world and the other.
Yes.
And I knew there was a message there and there was a reason why I was coming, but I hadn't got a clue what it was. And I think, well, let's start off with the serious side and then we can come to the lighter side, because I think that'll sort of, you know, sort of debrief people a little bit, because it's quite heavy what we're going on to speak to next. And bearing in mind you didn't know me from Adam, I remember coming and having a reading with you, and you'd said several things to me that really were validation. And it wasn't my first reading with you that this happened, but you started talking about this man that was coming through, and he was looking at the floor. So before I kind of go on to say a bit more about where that came from, will you tell us what that means to you as a medium when somebody comes through and they're looking at the floor?
Yeah, of course. It's if we can kind of all just pause in that and just kind of, you know, feel that for a moment, because that's, you know, when I first experienced that, it's a sense of observing that, you know, looking at somebody that's approaching you, but they won't look at you, and they're looking down at the floor. And I remember feeling this sense of deep kind of shame. You know, that was the overwhelming feeling. And then, of course, like, you know, something that the innate spirit have taught me is that all information is information. So whatever that you feel, sense, see, hear in contact, when you're sitting in service with somebody, is vital information. None of it is by chance. And I remember the spirit saying to me, what is that saying to you, Shane? And I remember feeling this sense of feeling shame, and then feeling kind of sick, like physically feeling sick, hit in the stomach, and then this deep sense of violation. You know, and then I think I said to you, you know, this man's a monster.
That was your exact words.
Yeah.
And you said, what you actually said was, you said this man was a monster, and then you looked at me very gently, and I think the important part of this is the compassion. Mm-hmm. And you said, were you on the end of this? And you still thought I was called Jade then.
Yes.
Yeah. But you said...
I probably would have referred to you by your name as well in that moment, which...
You did.
Yeah, it's just that sense of deep respect. And I feel quite emotional thinking about it.
Bringing up some for me as well, Shane. And the reason I'm sharing this is because I don't need to talk about the actual abuse per se in this conversation. I share that in my book, and some of the things that have happened to me, but I think everybody will understand from that word violation what that kind of abuse was. And, you know, for me, I had been the family scapegoat, and this had been denied all of my life. And even, you know, that the person that you were talking about had obviously passed because he was coming through in spirit. But even up to his passing, as far as I know, and I can't guarantee that I was told the truth about it, but as far as I know, he was still denying it, which a lot of perpetrators do. And the validation that I got in that moment was so healing for so many reasons, but one of them was this denial.
Yes.
And the fact that you could say that to me, and, you know, so what else do you get? Because I'm sure I'm not the only person that and that's not the only scenario that a person might come through with shame. You know, when somebody is sort of has come through to you from spirit, with that looking at the floor and that deep sense of shame, what do you feel from them at that time? Because I remember you said to me very clearly, you said, he's only here because you've allowed it and spirits have sanctioned it.
Sanctioned. That is the key, you know. It's at the core of that, you know. It's not just this one person kind of, you know, just turning up. It's a whole aspect, a whole manner of things just coming together at that point in time to in a way nourish and nurture and sometimes even trigger healing in a very deep and profound way. And you know, for me, you know, I've learned so much through those experiences, and for me, it defined the true meaning of mediumship. You know, is, you know, if I roll back, you know, 26 years ago, you know, I'd have people kind of say to me, "Could you turn a few cards?" And you know, I just, you know, these days that is so far from where it would be, because it's about healing. And for me, that was where or how holistic mediumship was born rather than mediumship. You know, it was this sense of all of that working together, as the innate and spirit have always said, is that it at the heart of it is healing. So, you know, kind of in those moments when that's happening is... you for a moment are feeling all of what that person's have experienced at some level. Mm. And also experiencing the feeling of the person standing behind you, i.e. spirit. And, you know, them in a way meeting the situation, because as you said, you know, there was such a denial, so much denial about it, and here we were in that moment where all of it meeting together at once.
And I think, you know, for me, I was that child, and I've said this to you before, you know, I was that child who I'd be saying, there's an elephant in the room, and everybody'd be looking at me going, what elephant? And then I would say, well, that one over there. And they'd say, what elephant? And then I would say, well, he's swinging his tail now and knocking all this stuff over. Can't you see it? And then they'd be like, what elephant? And then, you know, at the point where you're saying, well, it's just done a big poo in the corner, they'd still be saying, what elephant? And, you know, I think the sharing of these sort of stories that more and more people are doing now and being open about the things that have happened to us, more from a point of saying, actually, you know, you don't have to keep this within you, you can heal from it, is so important for the healing globally for all these things, because it's, you know, it's not something that is easy to recover from by any means, but it is possible. And that involves you sometimes saying, okay, if my family choose to disown me because they're not going, you know, they're going to stay in denial, and if my family are going to do that, there's nothing I can do about it, but I can actually be sure enough to know that that elephant was in the room.
You know, the thing is, it's like, you know, you and I met as strangers, you know, in that moment we were strangers, and here you are, you know, a little while in, having conversation at that kind of depth with that rawness, and people say to me, you know, don't you think twice about, you know, kind of sharing or delivering that? Well, the thing is, in that moment there's such an emotion behind you, you know, being emanated from that presence. And I, you know, these days I always say, you know, in that rawness, in that kind of truth, because it's a painful, harsh truth. And I think that, you know, if you had time, in a way you do have time to think about it, but you don't think about it, and if you did, you probably wouldn't share what you're about to share, you know. But there's so much momentum behind that, you know, the room becomes alive, that presence, and the presence is around that. Importantly, that's the other aspect, is that it's the presences around that are holding that space for that kind of truth to be birthed, and that healing to kind of come from that. You know, it's raw. It's really raw.
Absolutely. And, you know, in my work years ago when I did domestic violence training, you know, I think that it often gets forgotten that it's not just the abuser that feels shame, it's the abuser that feels shame too. But you don't always see signs of that, and you do not always see evidence of that, you know, in the earth plane. Yeah. But it's that thing that, you know, over there, when there is not the ability to be in denial anymore,
yeah,
whole different energy, isn't it?
Yeah, they, you know, it's that sense of, you know, it meets you, you know, you meet it, you know, everything becomes transparent. I think that's the biggest thing that I've seen over the years, is a deep transparency to what is. And I think that's sometimes what, you know, I find a little bit challenging in the time that we're living in right now, is when there are people that are going through, you know, horrendous trauma and pain through this global event that we're all experiencing. And, you know, someone else will throw a flippant comment like, well, you know, love and light, and it's all going to be okay. Well, yeah, but, you know, we've got to meet the rawness of it, because that's where the healing will come from, you know, and the fact that people are going hungry and starving and losing their jobs at such a huge, vast level, is, we, like you say, you know, the elephant in the room, we need to be meeting it. I think we're conditioned, and I think this is all a nudge from spirit, so it's probably a message, is that we're conditioned to not talk about stuff, when actually, in fact, we need to sit down and we need to, with grace and heart, have truthful conversations.
We sure do. And one of the things I've learned in my own healing path, and that of which I've helped others, because, you know, the interesting thing with working with the terminally ill is there is no getting better.
No.
So it's not like you had a good physio that gave you a choice and, you know, you could have headed for the wheelchair or you could have worked with her, which you chose to do, yeah? Okay. When someone's terminally ill, they're going to end up in Spirit. That's where they're headed. Yes. But the most rewarding part of that job to me, and I'm sure that's a huge rewarding part of what we're talking about in the heavy stuff part of your work, is that if a person can die in peace, then healing has still taken place. You know, we're so hung up down here on the physical body and how the physical body works or doesn't work. We don't get in enough to that part of healing that lies with the rawness and the pain and facing that pain.
Yes, yes. It's so essential to face what is, you know, in all of its polarities. So if that's immense joy, facing it, you know, and meeting it and embracing it and celebrating it, or the opposite end of that spectrum, you know, is facing what is hugely important. I think, again, when I kind of look back on my short time in the military, is that, you know, we were kind of taught to move into, you know, to move forwards, as you absolutely hugely know, to face what is, and that does take courage and heart and grit and determination and ultimately, you know, truth and honesty, and I think that's where the healing's born. You know, for me, you know, the path as a holistic mediumship is one that is very raw and gritty, but absolutely anchored in light and grace. But it's a messy, it's a messy business as well. You know, it's a messy, and I mean messy in the most beautiful ways, because within that is there's deep healing, but it's gritty. You know, it is really gritty.
It is, Shane, and I think it's really important that anybody listening to this podcast understands that, you know, when you're going to sort of try and do any kind of deep healing, that, you know, the first thing I would say is that don't be scared, you know, about going to see a medium. You know, just check out that they are somebody that works with integrity before you go. But don't be scared about going to see a medium, because nothing is going to come through that you're not ready for. Absolutely. You know, and when I was drawn, I had no idea why I was drawn to coming to see you. I wanted to be 100% sure. And I know that, you know, you didn't take any of that personally. You know exactly where I was coming from when I did. We had a laugh about it when I told you who I was.
Yeah,
but it was really important to me that I came with, you know, that open mind, but also with an understanding that you didn't know who I was, so that you couldn't be working on anything that you were thinking about. But that I was very, very ready to hear. And there was more than one apology that you've brought to me from Spirit of people that had harmed me this side of life, you know. And I was ready to hear that, because actually, as much as we think we want to hear an apology, if we're not ready to hear it, then we want that person to keep saying sorry, because we're stuck in the story, aren't we? Because we're still taking it personally.
Yeah. You know, just kind of like, you in a way, you're not hearing it because you're like, you know, you're kind of, you're hitting that wall, so to speak. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, I don't think anyone should be afraid to take those steps. And, you know, I kind of know at the core of it, as Spirit have said to me many times, is that at the heart of what they're doing is to add value to our years. You know,
add value
to our years. And that's, you know, that kind of, you know, is anchored in a sense of truth as well. You know, this is quite a funny little story, but at the time it wasn't funny at all, really. But, you know, I had this couple come, and a boyfriend and a girlfriend come, and you know, you could tell the boyfriend had been dragged along, and he thought all of this was nonsense and a load of cow Kalmuck, and he completely, you know, kind of had that aura about him. And, you know, I didn't realise he was coming, you know, and opened the door at a time where you could sit down together in that way, opened the door and there they both are. And I was kind of like a little bit taken back. And she said, is it okay? And I, you know, in other circumstances, and quite often that has happened over time, and I'm like, of course, you know, a husband and wife might come together. And I'm like, absolutely, because there's going to be someone that wants to have a chat with both of you. Come and take a seat, all good. But this particular moment, I was like, I'm not so sure that it is a good move. And I remember saying to them, hold on, just one sec. I went, are you sure? And she looked at me and was like, you know, she was very sure. And he was like, he kind of crossed his arms and dismissed it. And you could tell he was like, well, it's, you know, it's rubbish. So what does it matter? And I said to them both, are you really, really sure? Are you positive? And she said, yeah. And he went, yeah. And they sat down and I went, before we start, I just need to know again, are you sure? Because what I was feeling was that he was cheating on her.
Ooh, that's a bit of a difficult one.
And I just went, guys, are you really, really sure? And I looked at him when I said it last time. I said, are you sure? Because let me explain something to you. All of this, everything becomes very transparent, because that is what spirit about. You know, they see quite often what isn't being seen. And he started to shuffle. He started to look very uncomfortable. And I said to him, are you sure? And you could tell he was kind of like on the back foot. And he went, yeah. And I thought, okay. And I could feel, in a way, I guess, a little bit maybe of agitation of her grandmother as well in the room. But his grandfather was in the room. And they had agreed that, you know, the truth was then going to kind of come out now, you know. And I looked at him and went, well, you've got there's something you need to tell her. And then I looked at her and said, you're really instinctive. You know when someone's lying to you. And I went, let's leave it at that. And then you guys can come and talk to me at another time. Really difficult. Really difficult.
But definitely. Really difficult.
But it put the crowbar in between that relationship. And he had been cheating on her. Yeah. You know, this is what I say, you know, I've learned so much from these experiences. And, you know, in a way, she knew it. She actually wrote to me and said, I really want to thank you. She said, I've been dreaming that he had. My instincts were telling me he had, and that's why he'd come along, because in a way, he just thought it was someone turning some cards, and in a way, indirectly, he was trying to control the situation anyway.
Yeah.
You know, he was present, so it's like, you know, he's trying to control the situation. But she said to me, you know, even my friends were telling me, but you didn't know me from Adam, you were a complete stranger. And actually, that whole experience from my grandmother completely brought that relationship to a crashing end, and it liberated me, and I'm feeling so much more at peace from it. You know, so I don't think we should ever fear coming through the door, but
no.
I think we should always be prepared that we're going to meet truth.
And when you think about sort of, I'm thinking in particular, you know, coercive control relationships.
Yeah.
And relationships where, you know, there is a narcissist, you know, pulling the strings, which is invariably the case in these relationships. You know, you'll see a woman, And there will be things that will come out in my next book that will be on this subject as well. You'll see a woman and she'll appear to be incredibly intelligent on the surface, and, you know, be very switched on in terms of life, but she'll get drawn into, especially if you're being controlled by what we call a covert narcissist, because, you know, they're very subtle. And so, you know, they can be incredibly loving one minute and then they can be, you know, gaslighting you and stonewalling you the next. And it's very confusing. So, you know, you don't even notice when you're in a relationship like that, that somebody's cheating on you, or somebody, you know, has managed to sort of eject your family or your friends or everybody out of the equation, apart from the people that will agree with them. Yeah. You don't. Yeah. And then when you're ready to hear it, you know, you'll put a brick wall up to anybody and everybody until you're ready to hear it. But when you are ready to hear it, it can be just one tiny little thing that makes it go pop. And whether that's coming as they did in that situation to see someone like you, or whether that's just some sort of chance comment in the street, it could be anything, couldn't it? But yeah, you have to be ready to hear whatever. And I think the wonderful way about the way that you work, Shane, is that you have this deep, deep, deep integrity that I so respect and admire. And not everybody that works in the healing professions or supposed healing professions has got that. You know, I've mentioned John of God earlier. You know, if people are listening, please do look him up, because, you know, that was horrendous what went on there.
And it was over many years as well, Jay.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and then, of course, it's like everything, isn't it? Which is why I tell my story. And I talk about the things that I do, because once you make it okay to say these things, then other people, you know, that's what the hashtag Me Too campaign was all about. Suddenly it's like, oh, actually, there's people saying this. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a secret and shameful anymore. And it's massively healing. But I think, you know, moving forward in this chat, what I really want to do is mention the funny thing that that came in our reading. When, you know what I'm going to say, don't you? Yeah. When you hadn't got a clue what you were seeing and why you were seeing it, and you hadn't got a clue who I was. And I think this is a very, very telling way that spirit does validate who they are. Because an energy is an energy, isn't it, when it's coming through? And you'll get a sense of whether somebody was young, old, or, you know, male, female, that kind of thing. But there are, that can mean, you know, 100 people if you know a lot of people. But the validation. And I remember you sat there and you were saying, I have no idea what this means. But you said, I've got this man here and he's tossing a coin. And I remember just bursting out laughing because I knew exactly who it was. And you're saying, oh, you know, like, you understand that then? And I'm like, yeah, I get that. I know exactly who that is. And you still didn't know. You just said, oh, that's great. That's validation then, as long as you know what it means.
As long as you can work that out, that's fine. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And then, as the reading went on, it was very obvious that it was my late husband that was coming through. And I have to say, it's really interesting that I hadn't, again, until we had a pre-chat, you know, before this conversation today, that I had no idea that you had any military background whatsoever.
No, we never spoke about it. It's never come up.
Well, no, because when I was coming to you as a client and I was just coming to you as somebody for a reading, why would it? You know, you're not going to. So, you know, it's so interesting how there is, again, that military connection, because, you know, Gary was in the parachute regiment. But the most important thing about this, I mean, I'm laughing so much it's difficult for me to get the words out, but it was so funny, because when I first got married and I went to live in Berlin, and this is, you know, this story's in my book, but very, very few people knew it. Every time Gary introduced me to anybody, he'd say, oh, this is my wife, you know, we just got married. And they'd say, oh, how did you meet? And he'd say, oh, I won her on the toss of a coin. And people would look at him and they'd look at me and they'd say, no, how did you really meet? And he'd say, I've just told you, I won her on the toss of a coin. And I would sort of just look at them and smile and say, yeah, he did. And they would just sort of often go off shaking their heads, not understanding, you know, the rest of the story. But
isn't it to say, really?
Yeah. But actually, the actual story around it is that, again, you obviously just saw the tossing of the coin. You know, you just saw the event. You didn't know what it was about. But my husband and his best friend, when they went out, if they fancied the same girl, bearing in mind we were 19 when we met, so it was a girl back then.
Yeah, of course.
Young woman, you know.
Yeah, of course.
They would toss a coin, and they made this decision between them so that they'd never ever fall out over a woman.
Oh, Pure lads, that is, isn't it? You
know? Absolutely. And so they toss a coin, and whoever won the toss of the coin was allowed to chat the girl up. And even if she wasn't interested in him, the other guy was not allowed to smooth in, and that was it. And that way they knew they'd never, ever fall out over a woman. And so, again, fate played a massive hand that day because, I should never have met Gary where I met him. It was just the most unlikely meeting ever. And B, if he'd lost the toss of that coin that day, then I wouldn't have ended, you know, I wouldn't have ended up with his friend anyway, but, you know, we wouldn't have got married.
No, but, you know, it's that whole thing, isn't it? You know, what is meant for us doesn't pass us by.
And, oh, absolutely.
You know, because it's like, you know, that's like the universe conspiring to bring these two people together, you know. And what is meant for us does not pass us by. And it's never by chance, it's by design. And in a way, spirit have reflected that back in that moment where I'm like, oh, I don't know what this means. But, you know, something to do with tossing a coin. You know, it's a complete, like, reflection and sense of humour. That is spirit sense of humour, because I remember kind of, like, looking and thinking, what does that mean? And you just, like, smiling and then laughing and going, I know exactly what that means.
And so you didn't have to unravel it any further than that, because it was just a validation. Yes. And you know, given that sort of people don't tend to come through, you know, I saw... somebody that I knew that died very tragically actually came through via a public event that I went to, and it was my late husband that brought her through. She'd only been gone about a year, you know, so there is that sort of, you know, there is that help, isn't there, from that other side of when somebody does come through. But I, you know, it was very important for me to be able to hear what you said in with regards to the shame side of things, and how deep that was and how huge that was. I think I probably cried the whole time I was with you that day. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, it's important to really, you know, say to other people that are thinking about going and having this kind of experience, if something does come through that is that deep, then you are an incredible person in the way you work in terms of holding that space. And that is so important, because if somebody is scared of what they're feeling and they're scared of what they're sensing and then, you know, they're not able to hold that space, there won't be any healing, will there?
No. It's a partnership between all things, you know. It's a centered partnership between, you know, yourself and the person that's gently holding that space with you, working with you, and importantly, you know, the partnership with the innate, you know, the innate of bringing all of that together. And in a way, you know, through mannerisms or words, you know, the minute pieces of detail.
Or tossing your coins.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, incredibly detailed and incredibly important. You know, it's just everything's there, and it's about all of that coming together. But, you know, for me, that's way beyond me. And I guess over the years that I've learned to listen really deeply, and I kind of feel things at such a deep level, you know, empathic, it's just allowing that to move through you, and a meeting that, you know, meeting that person with compassion and care, you know, because quite often you're seeing them sometimes at the most kind of vulnerable, and also you see them turn into the most strongest, and it's like almost a process of birthing, you know, is you're seeing this person kind of, you know, reclaim a part of themselves or a deep part of themselves, you know, kind of in many ways reclaim a huge amount of kind of strength and power, if you want to use that word, you know, in a grateful way.
And let me add one word into that, Shane, dignity, because when you've been through certain things in life, the one thing you lose it through your behavior afterwards, and you lose it through the event itself. You know, you get your dignity back. And dignity is something that if we gave more dignity, that's one thing that, you know, work again, working with the terminally ill, you see some, you know, people in that environment that really are making the dignity of the patient paramount, and others back when I did it that wouldn't and didn't. And that's something that is much, much better now. But, you know, your level of compassion, your level of empathy, it was a gift. It was a huge gift, just from a chance conversation of finding you. And coming towards the end of this conversation today, we want to come on to how people can find you. I mean, things are different at the moment and people, you know, can't see you maybe face to face at the moment, but how are you working right now?
Yeah, so, you know, I kind of, I loved, you know, sitting with someone and just kind of being in that same space together. But for many, many years, I've worked via Skype. So, you know, kind of when this transition happened, it wasn't as, you know, thankfully it wasn't as brutal as it could have been, because in a way I'd kind of been working in that space and it was like this deep understanding that I needed to probably transition all of it into that space to be able to create consistency for those that I work with and also for myself. You know, we're seeing, you know, drastic change every few days and week by week. So I think Spirit, you know, they were absolutely right to say to me, just transition it all onto Skype and continue to do that, Shane. And I thought, okay, I will. And I can see exactly why, because, you know, I had people write to me and say, surely, Shane, now I can come and see you face to face. But I kind of knew that could change any moment, you know, in any minute, you know. So, yeah, I've moved it all into Skype and, you know, I kind of, you know, blessed and honoured and moved to speak to people, you know, right across the pond, right the way over to New Zealand and Australia. So, you know, I absolutely love it. And people say to me, oh, you know, some of the people I've worked with over a period of time that have come and sat with me physically have said, oh, that was all right. That was really good. There's no difference. And I don't need to get in my car. So, you know, it's become such a, as we are right now, you know, it's become a really good vehicle and a really, really good tool, you know, and some of the people I've mentored over time to do the work in the past have, you know, reluctantly wanted to use it. And I said, actually, you know what, you're of service. We need to find the tools to be able to allow that to happen. And Skype is a brilliant tool for that. Yeah.
So if somebody wants to make an appointment with you, they can find you at what, your website?
Yeah, my website, which is all the W's, www.shanegad.com. Nice and easy. And you'll find me, and yeah, you'll find all my information there and kind of how to book with me. And you know, kind of other people's experiences are on there as well, as in the form of testimonials.
Yeah. Well, you've got a massive testimonial here. I'm just going to, before I end this conversation today, I'm just going to add to the tossing of the coin thing that there was that few people that knew about it, that the friend that brought me to you, and she dropped me off, you know, gave me a lift to yours when I came to see you. When I got back into the car, I just burst out laughing. And she said, what are you laughing about? And I told her, and she said, you never told me that story. So you know, what, it's one of my best friends didn't even know that story until it had come through, you know, via your validation of Gary coming through. So
Jay, wasn't there a moment as well where I turned to you and something about not all angels get their wings or something?
Oh, gosh, yes.
That just dropped into my mind now, so I think that might be a nudge, but yeah.
Yeah. I think it is important that we make sure everybody that's listening knows that obviously we're talking about this because, you know, it's a permission-giving thing. Yes. You know, yeah. But yes, You said to me in the reading, you were talking about my life moving forward, and I'm not going to go into that bit right now, but you were talking about my life moving forward, and you were talking about those synchronicities, and you know that whole thing about whatever's meant to be will be, and that which is meant for you doesn't pass, all that kind of stuff, about my future. And then you said, you came out with it, and you said, it wasn't the angels. You said about people literally dropping in front of you, and I burst out laughing.
Out of the sky.
Yes, I burst out. You were talking about that, and I burst out laughing, because of course I immediately thought of paratroopers, because that's exactly what they do. They fall from the. You were talking about things falling from the sky and dropping in front of you, and then you added on the end. But sometimes without wings. And of course, that made me laugh even more. And you were like, I don't know what this means, but they're saying sometimes without wings. And I said, well, I know exactly what it means. My husband was a paratrooper, and what they're telling me is I will meet somebody else, because I've always said I'd get married again, and yet he's been dead for 38 years. But I've also said I'll never get divorced, so I'm not going to marry anybody unless it's going to be till death us do part. excuse me, but you were talking about that, and I just started laughing, and I said, again, you didn't know who I was at the time, so it made no sense to you whatsoever. And I said, what they're telling me is that I'm going to meet somebody very different, and it's you know, and it's not, and I said to you, and it's not an angel they're talking about.
Yeah, incredible, you know, just like beautiful moments. They're just beautiful moments that seem so spontaneous, but actually behind it is a whole lot of intention from their part, you know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And whenever Gary has come through, you know as well as I do that his sense of humour is exactly as wacky now as it was back then when he was, you know, alive. You know, I don't think I've ever had so much fun as I did when I married that guy. But you know, yeah. That was an incredible thing, that whole angel and wings thing, because of course paratroopers, that's the thing that they absolutely covet, is the beret, which has, you know, the cat badge on it, which is wings. And the wings, once they've done, you know, they're past their P company and everything, the wings that they actually sew onto their uniform.
They're
coveted.
Yeah, absolutely. Huge, huge. It's at the core of who they are and what they do.
But you know what, Shane, just before we end, it also told me when you said the way you said it about how things, you know, fall out of the sky and drop in front of you, it also told me something else that I've always kind of innately known, is that whoever I do end up with to grow old with, because it doesn't seem like I'm going anywhere anytime soon.
Oh, there's plans.
Whoever it is that I do grow old with is going to literally turn up in front of my face as suddenly and as unexpectedly, well, maybe not quite as unexpectedly, but as suddenly, and by pure it being drawn together to make two lives that should never cross. Yeah. And that's how we will meet, in exactly the way I met him.
How magical, how beautiful, you know, it is. It's like, you know, it's like full circle in a way, you know, there's an element of that. And
well, it's only taken 38 years, so you know, and quite honestly, all joking aside, I wouldn't have been ready before now. No, and you know, I would not have been ready before now. And that's not because I was hanging on to him particularly. I've known for a long time that I've got his blessing to meet somebody. I mean, you know, as he would have had mine if it'd been the other way around. But, you know, in terms of my healing and you know, law of attraction, what you are is what you attract. And I made a very conscious decision when I had my last relationship that was serious that I wasn't going to get involved with anybody until I had done as much healing as I felt that I could to attract somebody really lovely, decent and good into my life.
That whole knowing as well who you are, and you know, it coming from that deep core place.
Absolutely. So for all the listeners out there, if you want to make an appointment with Shane, he's just had the very glowing testimonial, and it's very, very, very well deserved, because I've rarely met in my life somebody who puts together the empathy, the compassion, you know, all the things that are really, really important with a special, you know, the work that he does is incredible. And I think for those of us who've lost people to the other side, sometimes just, you know, messages from them can be just so healing. So his website, as he said, is www.shanegad.com. And he's operational whether we're locked down or whether we aren't. So thank you so much, Shane, for being with me today for this lovely conversation that I have thoroughly enjoyed.
Me too. I'm really, really honoured, Jay, and it's been a really beautiful, real and raw and warm and heartfelt conversation. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you too.
That concludes episode 2 of Alternate Realities, a wonderful conversation with Shane today. I must say, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I hope we brought you a really good blend of the funny and the serious and all those sides that spirit might bring through from the other side. Sometimes we feel lost when we've actually, you know, had somebody that's passed over, somebody that we were very well connected to, somebody that we loved and somebody that we deeply cared for. And for a lot of us, it needs a medium, some other person to connect those two worlds. The most amazing thing about it, and that's the most amazing thing to me about Shane, is that when it's done with integrity, when it's done with purpose, and when it's done, most importantly, with heart and with love, it can be truly healing, even though it may not be exactly what you expect to hear. So episode 3 will be with you very shortly. I've got an interview coming up with an incredibly brave lady. I thank you for listening to the show today, and we'll be back with you soon.